Okay, we'll get started. We have a quorum. Some of our members have already checked in and left. Bring the order of the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee and start out with the roll call.
Representative Cornish?
Here.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Considine?
Here.
Representative Dean? Representative Flanagan? Representative Hertas? Representative Hillstrom?
Here.
Representative Howe? Representative Lohmer?
Here.
Representative Lucero?
Here.
Representative Neuberger, Representative O'Neill,
I'm here.
Representative Quam, Representative Rosenthal, Representative Schoen, Representative Ward, and Representative Zerwas.
Here.
Okay, we'll start out with the motion to approve the minutes of March 22nd. Representative Zerwas, could you move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Zerwas moves the minutes of March 22nd for approval. See no objection. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Today we have five bills before us. The first one is Representative Fabian with House File 3014. And we're going to... Chair will move House File 3014 to be referred to the General Register and have a author's amendment. The A16, the Chair will move the author's amendment A16 to get it in the bill if the author would. Well, I don't know if you really like it or not, but put it in the proper form. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill before you, House File 3014, is attempting to address the issue of the auto cycle, the Polaris slingshot that's being made, and we're trying to, through this legislation, get that moved out of the motorcycle category into its own category called an auto cycle. There's a number of things with regards to motorcycles and this three-wheeled hot rod that Polaris is making, I'll call it. If you haven't seen one, it's really a very, very interesting thing. J.R. Burke is here with me today. I'm going to have him kind of walk through the changes as is being proposed, not just in Minnesota, but kind of all around the country. They have a very concerted effort. In no way is anybody trying to create an exclusive category that only, in this case, Polaris can meet. We're trying to create some definitions and get that into law so that anybody in the market can have an opportunity to build a machine that conforms to these things. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would refer to Mr. Burke, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about the amendment, too, real quickly, if you want.
Okay. Sir, if you want to give your name and title and begin.
Sure.
And then while you're in at that, if you can yet, release a suggested retail price, I'd love to know.
Chairman Cornish, members, my name is J.R. Burke. I am the State and Provincial Government Relations Manager for Polaris Industries. And as Representative Fabian alluded to, I've been working on this issue around the auto cycle definition. Really across the country. And so what we're proposing here through this House File 3014 is not anything new. Frankly, in your packets you should have some information around the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. These are folks who are, they're essentially DPS folks as well as law enforcement who've come up with a series of recommendations for how this new type of product should be regulated. That ties back to their federal classification as a motorcycle, but allows states to distinguish them as auto cycles in order to allow DPS and other agencies to have the necessary administrative flexibility to regulate these products. They are different from traditional two-wheel motorcycles in that they don't have a straddle seat, but they have a bucket seat. They don't have a handlebar, but they have a steering wheel. But they are, as I mentioned, federally classified as a motorcycle. NHTSA essentially says anything less than four wheels is considered a motorcycle. So what we've done is we've tried to find the sweet spot for this product as a subtype of motorcycle, allowing them to be distinguished from traditional motorcycles, which Polaris is a proud manufacturer of course. So subdivision 3A lays out the definition, three wheels in contact with the ground, which is typical language for two-wheel motorcycle or regular motorcycles, as trikes and otherwise. The seating, as I mentioned, is not a straddle type. It has a steering wheel, anti-lock brakes, and then it ties back to that federal classifications so that it'll say that they have to be manufactured to the federal motor vehicle safety standards that is applicable to motorcycles, which this these vehicles are. So that is the main thrust of it. The second purpose of this language is that we have, you know, we have dealers across the state. Some of them carry slingshots, some of them do not. But what we have heard from those who do is that they have customers that come in, and the customer does not realize that they have to have a motorcycle endorsement in order to even test drive these products. So it is a barrier to entry, which frankly in the AMVA document that you have before you, law enforcement has suggested is not a motorcycle endorsement should not be necessary to operate these vehicles because they have the automotive features, they handle like a car, and so on. So steering wheel, pedals at the floor, bucket seats, three-point harnesses, etc. So what we've suggested is let's do something that makes sense, not only from the business's perspective, but also from the practical perspective of law enforcement and, frankly, those who are responsible for the motorcycle endorsement process today, who suggest that it's difficult to envision a skills course that can accommodate these size of vehicles, even though they're considered motorcycles. You also don't use the same skills to operate a slingshot as you do when you get the skills test done for your two-wheel bike. These vehicles do not tip over. You don't need to lean in to operate these things. They're used with regular automotive features. So that would be the definition as well as the operator licensing piece. There are a couple of provisions in here. In the bill summary, you can read more about them, but essentially just technical items around footrests versus foot pegs and things of that nature. So we would certainly request your support for this legislation. The final point I would make is that there are about 22 states right now that have an auto cycle definition. They're not all mirroring one another, though AMVA would like them to. Polaris would like them to. And there's about 10 states right now that have pending legislation through the various phases of the process that are also considering language which essentially mirrors this bill. So we think what we're proposing here makes a lot of sense. It's definitely the direction that the rest of the country is going, and it certainly is good for those small businesses who are trying to build their business off of innovative products like the slingshot. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the other things that we're trying to address, working with the Department of Public Safety, there have been some concerns expressed by some people who are riding motorcycles in terms of the accident reports, if there are some accidents with these new classification of vehicles. What we're working with DPS is to try to get those accident reports so that they would fall into this category of autocycles, not into the category of automobiles or motorcycles. So we've had conversations with ABATE, for example, and they're comfortable with the direction that we're going.
Okay, Representative Hillsborough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these are questions, and you might not be able to answer them for me today. Are you going to Commerce?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I think the motion here today was to send it to the General Register by the Chair Cornish.
What was your question, I'm sorry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question really is about insurance. So we have different requirements for automobiles versus motorcycles. And now that you're actually making this more closely resemble a motor vehicle than you are a motorcycle, I want you to get me some clarification if you're not going to Commerce between now and the floor to tell me what category of insurance will be required. I'm a little concerned that you're exempting them from the protective eyewear, given that there's no requirement for a... It says the equipment for operator and passengers amends an exemption from mandatory helmet use. So are you saying that they have to have eyewear and a helmet if they operate this? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, we believe the language says with regards, first of all, to your first question about licensing and the motorcycles and so forth, and, excuse me, insurance. These would be considered in the industry as a motorcycle, so they would be insured as a motorcycle. I'm sure, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised that the industry may have some different rates for this. I don't know that. And then also the licensing on the vehicle itself, it would also be licensed as a motorcycle. As to the part about helmets and eyewear, we read the bill so that if you're under the age of 18, you would be, whether you were a passenger or the operator, you would be required to wear a helmet. And then also everyone would be required to wear the mandatory eyewear, just like with a motorcycle.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Hilton? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm curious as to Section 6. It clarifies that riding motorcycles two abreast within a lane is permitted only if the vehicle safely fits. Is that two people abreast or is that two motorcycles? Because I don't think current law allows you to currently drive two motorcycles in the same lane next to each other. And why are you making that change?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I will defer to Mr. Burke on that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, today the way that motorcycles can operate is they can operate in a staggered abreast form. Format. These vehicles, because of their width, we felt that it would be appropriate to clarify that these vehicles cannot be operated in any type of abreast manner just because of their width. They wouldn't be able to safely do that in an individual lane. This is similar language as other states have adopted across the country as well to address the exact same issue, whether it be they allow operation in line two abreast or in a staggered fashion. So it was perhaps out of an abundance of caution that we wanted to ensure that we were clear so that as law enforcement went about regulating these vehicles on the roadways that they had some clarity about how to go about ensuring that this is safely done and that the consumers themselves also know what the restrictions are in real life circumstances.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But again, the testimony was consistent with what my understanding of current law is that they'd have to be staggered, and this does not require staggering. This says that if two motorcycles safely fit within the lane, they can now ride side by side, and that is not current practice, Mr. Chair. So I think that piece needs to be fixed.
Well, this has already come through transportation. If it needed to be fixed, it should have been fixed there. It's not really our purview to do transportation things here. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's currently a criminal statute and a ticketable offense if you ride side by side, so you're eliminating the ability to cite for that if you do this, because it's not currently allowed. It's my understanding.
Good. Representative Hall?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do believe you can operate two motorcycles side by side if both operators are in agreement. I believe that that's current practice and current law. If you look at the current law, it says can be operated not more than two abreast in a single lane of traffic. The change is if the vehicles fit safely within the designated space of the lane. So we're not changing current law. You can currently, as I've done many times, ride side by side as long as both operators are in agreement.
All right.
Mr. Chair,
yep.
if I may.
Go ahead.
I'm also a two-wheel motorcycle operator, and what I can say is that for certain, if you're at a complete stop at a traffic light or whatever, you can be two abreast. I know that. I'm not certain about while you're in motion, but at least for sure I know that when you can be two abreast at a stop, which assumes that at some point you're going to be rolling and in motion. And so I would echo Representative Howe's statement with that. It would seem logical to me that we wouldn't be making a change in current law or a criminal statute as much as we would be simply providing clarification that because these are a subtype of motorcycle, so the general construct of the motorcycle statute, unless otherwise stated in this language, would apply, whether it be for insurance, helmet use under 18, eyewear, And then general other operational characteristics of these vehicles, where that's otherwise called out as to be operated or used in a way which is distinct from traditional two-wheel or trike-type motorcycles, that's what this language does.
Okay, any more questions? Representative Vivian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the makeup of these vehicles, they don't fit side by side in a single lane. They just don't.
Okay, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I got to say, these look like they're a lot of fun, first of all. But I don't really get we're licensing them as motorcycles. We're insuring them as motorcycles. The only difference I see is the steering wheel. What protections do people who have never ridden this kind of vehicle have? Going from a car to basically a trike with a steering wheel.
Mm-hmm. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there's obviously more to the differences between the vehicles than what you stated. In section one of the bill, lines 1.1 through 1.4 addresses, it does have three wheels. It has seats. It has the pedals on the floor, like in your automobile, instead of it on the handlebars. It has a steering wheel. It has anti-lock brakes. So there are a number of differences. They handle similarly to a motor vehicle, a car. I've not been in one. I don't have one. But I'm interested in the MSRP, just like Representative Chair Cornish is. But so there are substantial differences, and maybe Mr. Burke wants to address some of the other ones. But I hope that answers your question.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does to a certain extent, but looking at the vehicles in comparison to the trikes, granted that they have steering wheels and foot controls, they look pretty much the same. And I'm just wondering, looks like they might handle fairly much the same, even though the differences are pedals and steering wheel. And someone who has not ridden a motorcycle or a trike before might be at a disadvantage getting into one of these for the first time and really not understanding the best way to operate it.
Okay, any more questions? With that, Representative Fabian, you want to? I'll move the House File 3014 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Representative Smith, House File 2515. Representative Smith, anybody want to move the bill here from Representative Smith? The chair will move House File 2515 to be referred to the General Register. And Representative Smith, go ahead. Do you have any amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, thank you. There is one amendment, A2.
Okay, the chair will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Without any objections, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, to your bill, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. House File 2515 is a state bar-supported bill. This bill updates the Minnesota Probate Code. It deals with inflationary adjustments and trust code compliance from the 2015 session law. And Mr. Sampson is here to give some additional testimony, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, sir. Give your name and title and begin, sir.
Yes, thank you, Michael Sampson. I'm an attorney at Maslin LLP in Minneapolis, and I'm the co-chair of the Legislative Committee for the Minnesota State Bar Association. I was also a member of the subcommittee that reviewed this bill. The Uniform Probate Code was updated by the Uniform Law Commissioners in 2008, and we put the review of those revisions on hold while the Minnesota Trust Code was being developed in the last 5 years. And since that was enacted last year, we refreshed this effort and The main focus of it is to update the dollar figures for inflation. The figures in the probate code haven't been updated since the bill was introduced and enacted in 1989, so the numbers are quite stale. And they're adjusted here to reflect the changes in the consumer price index since 1989. There are a couple of other technical changes that we thought made sense to add to the probate code just to make it more user-friendly. Definition of a term governing instrument, which is used 14 times in the statute but wasn't defined. We thought that was an important addition. And essentially there were a couple of other clarifications, but if there are any questions about it, I'd be happy to answer them.
Members, any questions on Representative Smith's bill? Okay, if there is none, the chair will Representative Smith, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support. Thank you.
And nobody in the crowd to testify? Chair, we renew the motion on House File 2515 as amended to move to the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl, House File 1948. Chair will move House File 1948 to be referred to civil law. Do you have any amendments?
No amendments.
I think we do, actually. Representative Erdahl, we do have a DE1.
Oh, we do. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, sure, we have an amendment. What am I thinking? Yes, we have an amendment.
Well, Chair, we'll move the DE1 amendment to get it in the shape the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Representative Erdahl, through your bill, 1948.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got three bill hearings today, so that was the others don't have amendments. We all know that drivers are supposed to stop when the red stop arm comes out on a school bus. Each year in Minnesota, we survey our bus drivers and ask them to count violations that occur in one day. 2,700 drivers took part. There were about 10,000 trips a day. In the past 5 years, there were 533 school bus crashes, resulting in 7 deaths and 211 injuries to those involved. On that survey, the average count in Minnesota is 400 violations per day of the school bus stop arm provision, or approximately 72,000 violations a year. There are about 300 citations issued each year. We need to do something to help stop this. House File 1948 will increase the penalty for this violation from $300 to $500. It would still be a misdemeanor on the if you pass on the left, on the right. It is a gross misdemeanor presently. I would also hope that by doing this piece of legislation, we are raising awareness in Minnesota about this grave safety issue. Could more be done? Yes, I'm sure that it could. Is this a panacea to the problem? No, but it is a start, and hopefully people will pay more attention. Before the next stop, I plan on paying... going over the driver's training manual a little bit more and see if perhaps we could add some emphasis in training on this issue. So with that, I think Mr. Kelleher may have some comments, but I would encourage your support of this piece of legislation. I am going to show just a very brief video clip. Hopefully someone will help me do this. Okay, is it up?
Yeah.
And? It'll come back here. All right, watch. Here it comes.
Oh my goodness.
That's the type of thing we're trying to keep from happening. Representative Hertog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you look at that video, you can see the oncoming cars are trying to get out of the way on the right side. They're starting to lean the other way. What the camera doesn't show is perhaps something that we're not aware of. And one might reasonably deduce that the driver of that truck, for whatever reason, was maybe not being attentive that the school bus was about to stop or it was putting out its arm and had to make a decision. The other oncoming cars may have actually stopped or maybe come near a stop where he didn't have room to get through there, perhaps. I'm just being objective about what I just saw. And so my question is...
Well, let me just say, Representative Hertog, this driver spent 245 days in jail and got two years probation for that. And most of the violations occur in oncoming traffic passing on the driver's left.
Okay.
Those are most violations.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So I understand the $500, the increase of a $200 fine as being an additional deterrent for doing that. But is this potentially just not a problem more of enforcement of those who violate as opposed to raising the fine?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riddle. Representative Hertog, yes, it could be. There are other things that we could do. But frankly, I don't know that we could pass them into legislation. let's put it that way. So this does a couple things. It does increase awareness, I would hope, of the issue. It does increase the penalty, and some people who become aware of that, I hope, would consider that. I did suggest maybe there are some things we can do in driver's training to place greater emphasis on this issue. There are other things like, you know, we could put cameras on every stop arm. But that, I'm not suggesting that we do that, but I'm saying that's an option. That's $400 a camera. There's the expense and other problems with that. But the problem is that the bus drivers are doing their job. You've got students getting on the bus, and you're working with that, and then somebody comes by, whoosh, and you don't have time to write the license plate number down and all of that, so it's hard to do. It's hard to catch these people.
Representative Earl, we've got to get going. Representative Earl, you've got to, Representative Hertog, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's fine.
Okay, Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was glad you stepped in because I recognize that video, where it's from, how long ago it was, and I know there was an extensive investigation done by the State Patrol on this one, and in particular because it did have video. And the only thing I will say is, from a person who actually has to deal with the faxes that come in from the bus companies and for the bus stop arm violations, and when you're trying to deal and figure out and follow up with who was driving the car and not have video evidence in this day and time. And I've actually witnessed some where the person, I don't know how they would have stopped when the bus driver flung the stop arm out, and I mean, they literally didn't have time to stop, right? And so those things happen. I will say that what is concerning to me on the fine level, I don't think it fixes the problem. I know that we have a major problem when we see that, and I'm definitely going to support you. But what I would like to see is that if you're going to fax in a violation that has this significant of a fine, there should be the absolute follow-up evidence that comes with it, and there should be video, like as in this particular case, too. Because when it comes to the police department, it is not always as clear-cut on both sides when you get limited information on this fax that comes to us. So I do want to present you with some of the difficulties in following up with some of this as well, too. But so glad to support the bill, but we do need to do more on the evidentiary side of this to make sure that we have a clear-cut case, because sometimes it, who's driving the car, it's the same thing we had when it came down to stoplight cameras and other issues like that, and how much trouble we've had with that. So
yeah. I'll just say quickly, Representative Schoen, that I'm more concerned about, I'm not as concerned about the convictions as I am trying to influence people not to do it in the first place. But I share some of your thoughts.
Any more questions? We've got another testifier. Mr. Keller, do you want to say something too, and that other testifier?
I don't know that we need our other testifier, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tom Kelleher. I represent the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We represent about half the school buses in the state. From a contracting level, we're private businesses. The Minnesota School Boards Association also supports this bill. They're in the back of the room. And before I get too far ahead, I'd like to thank Representative Hillstrom and Representative Schoen for their help. Representative Hillstrom a couple years ago, and Representative Schoen for the information that he provided to me last year when I first started working on this proposal. We're an industry. We are doing our best to drive students to and from school every day. Millions and millions of students, millions and millions of miles every day during the school year, about 180 days. The video that Representative Erdahl showed is probably one of the most egregious ones that we've found. There are others. There's actually one that's just unbelievable to anybody who is a parent. There is a stopped school bus, a state patrol officer behind the school bus, and the person passes the state patrol officer, passes the stop arm, passes the school bus. And then the trooper immediately went around and wrote that gentleman a nice ticket. There are a lot of things that are difficult with this issue. I think if you would notice on the video that Representative Erdahl showed you, that bus was stopped for a good 10 seconds, maybe longer, before that tractor-trailer came screaming by at 65 miles an hour. I don't know what that gentleman was doing. I don't know what he admitted to in court. It was tying his shoe or playing with his phone or his CB radio or whatever. But he had three choices. Passing the left, passing the right, and go right up the middle of that school bus, which would have been a real disaster. And if anybody wants to see it, I'll be out in the hall and I have it, and I'll email it to you. You can see the shadows of the children getting on the school bus after that blue truck came screaming by. He went between the children and the school bus at 65 miles an hour. That's something that I think Representative Erdahl made very clear, that we're trying to do awareness. If it's a big yellow school bus, kids get on and off it on a regular basis in your neighborhood or on county roads. Keep your distance. Be aware that they stop and start often, and kids get on and off them often. So we're trying to do, as an industry, every year we try to work on a safety issue around school buses. And, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Whenever we get a guy out in uniform, I kind of like to just hear a word. Could you just come up and tell us if in support of it or not, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Lieutenant Brian Roof, State Patrol, Director of Pupil Transportation. This is not a DPS initiative, but I work very closely with the school bus industry and both school bus associations. And like was explained and demonstrated in the video, it's a very serious violation or offense, and obviously the potential outcome, should a child get struck, is an important matter and needs to be addressed, and the driver should be held accountable. So.
Okay.
If anybody has any questions for me, I'll certainly answer, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a question for you. Now that there's just a criminal penalty is the only thing that's in the bill, why is it going to civil law?
It is. I'm going to refer to the transportation, I believe.
You haven't been to transportation yet, have you?
Okay. Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, does this take away... I just got to ask this. I actually don't know one way or the other. Is this going to take away my local jurisdiction's ability to offer diversionary programs for this by taking that out of the bill? And I'm sorry to be uneducated about that. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
No, I think this is amendment just changes that one. Because something isn't there doesn't mean it's gone.
I mean, just Mr. Chairman, I would say no, that's certainly not legislative intent.
Okay. Thank you, Lieutenant. Any other questions? The chair would... Representative Holland, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not actually a question, but that incident actually happened. It was my school district's bus. It actually happened just outside my district. But I will tell you that my emails and phone lit up when that all was on the news. And it is right where Highway 20... Transportation gets into this because it's right where Highway 23 goes from four lanes to two lanes. And so it's problematic that the person wasn't paying attention. I would have probably gave him a little bit of an out if he would have been from someplace other than the area, but he'd driven that road many times. It's frustrating to see these types of events happen.
Representative Erdahl, I'm going to renew the motion. I can't see any relation to civil law at all, neither can my lead PFL committee person, so I'm going to... renew the motion, House File 1948, as amended, referred to transportation. So I'm pretty sure they want it, so and good luck there. I like the bill. So, all right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Zerwas with House File 2572.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll move House File 2572 be re-referred, except I don't know where we're headed.
Refer to General Registry. Refer to General Registry, you said? Okay.
That's exactly what I meant.
Representative Zerwas has moved his bill. Any amendments?
No.
Okay. Two-year bill, Representative Zerwas.
House File 2572. Is some comfort language for some of the counties that child advocacy centers work with. We appropriated about $400,000 in additional money last session for child advocacy centers to expand into different parts of the state. Child advocacy centers work with coordination of really complex, difficult abuse and or neglect cases or sexual abuse cases with children, getting all the resources under one umbrella and doing child interviews in an investigatively and supportive way and supportive for the child victim and the families as well. In order to accomplish that, there's a pretty comprehensive team that includes law enforcement, child protection, prosecution, perhaps medical folks, mental health, victim advocacy, child advocacy center staff, and as a part of that, there's that team or collaborative approach. If you look at the statute, when it talked about who information could be shared with, children's advocacy centers weren't specifically called out in the statute, and some folks had a little bit of discomfort with that missing in the statute, despite the fact that this approach has been undertaken, especially in the metro area, for nearly 30 years. And so with me is Marcia Milliken, and she's with the Minnesota Children's Alliance, and can explain a little bit about how we arrived here today and the role of child advocacy centers.
All right, ma'am, your name and title, and begin. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Cornish and committee members. My name is Marcia Milliken. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance, which is a coalition of children's advocacy centers, We currently have 7 established children's advocacy centers, 4 developing children's advocacy centers as a result of last year's legislative appropriation, and anticipate 3 more developing children's advocacy centers in 2017. Children's advocacy centers provide services as part of a multidisciplinary team approach that consists of child protection, law enforcement, prosecutors, medical personnel, mental health, and victim advocacy. They investigate child abuse, they help victims heal, and they hold offenders accountable. The team conducts monthly case reviews on open cases, and one key component is the ability to share relevant case information amongst the professionals. Some county attorneys and child protection investigators recognize children's advocacy centers as included under Statute 66.558, while others do not. Children and families would benefit from a more consistent interpretation of the statute across the state. We would like to see the statute amended to clearly specify that children's advocacy centers are to be included in the list of professionals in the multidisciplinary child protection team statute.
Okay. Questions from members on the bill? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a strong supporter of these centers, and I'm a strong supporter of the use of these multiple discipline approaches. So we've noticed that in the area of vulnerable adults that sometimes they've been using these child advocacy centers to do some of those forensic interviews, as sometimes there are some reverting behaviors as folks age. And so the question is, there's nothing in this that precludes them from sharing information in those kinds of cases as well, right? You're not narrowing how you're eligible to share an information, just to specifically to child abuse, neglect kinds of cases, are you?
Mr. Chair,
there was
members of Representative Hillstrom. I think in subdivision 4, the definition, we added a definition for child advocacy centers because that came up in HHS reform, I believe. And so it says it's a multidisciplinary team approach whose primary purpose is to provide children who have been the victim of abuse and their non-offending families. It's my take and my understanding that that's their primary purpose. Another role that they've been utilized in the past is for vulnerable adults. If you want to work with me on some language around that, I would be comfortable with that. Otherwise, I think it's covered in here, but I'd be willing to work with you in whatever you want to go forward.
All right, thanks.
Okay, questions, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. Those of you know, I carried the bill last year to get the funding for get these advocacy centers set up. And it's my understanding, this is just clarification so these groups that are setting up understand and what their purpose is, and I want to thank you.
Okay. Questions, members? Okay, if not, I will, you go ahead and make your motion.
I'll renew my motion to send the bill to the General Register.
Okay, without any other questions, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
We're dealing with the Senate file 1137, Representative Lohmer's bill. And Representative Lohmer, you may move your own bill and address any amendments, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I move Senate file 1137 for re-referral to be placed on the General Register, and I move the author's A1 amendment to update the enactment date to 2016.
Okay, Representative Lohmer moves her bill, and we'd like to approve the A1 amendment to get it in the shape the author would like it. Without objection, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, Representative Lohmer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill makes a couple of important changes to who is considered to be in a position of authority in our criminal sexual conduct statutes. Under current law, an adult could groom a child throughout the school year, and starting the first day of summer break, that person would no longer be considered in a position of authority. It also includes the adults who are not necessarily charged with being in a position of authority by the minor's parent, but who assume that role, often without the parent's knowledge. So last year, this committee heard the House companion bill to this and moved it to the floor on a voice vote. The bill did not come up for a vote on the House floor, so it was sent back to this committee. So we are hearing Senate version today, which is a result of compromises that has already been passed off the Senate floor. It's just waiting for House action. So there's a couple of changes from the House version that were compromises with the Senate, and the testifiers can speak to those substantive changes. So I have with me Karen Long, Assistant Ramsey County Attorney, and she'll speak to the bill.
Okay, ma'am, with your name and title again, and then begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Long. I am an Assistant Ramsey County Attorney, and I'll note that this language has been approved by the County Attorneys Association. It is being forwarded by the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and we appreciate Representative Lohmer's support as well. Essentially, what we have in this Senate version is addressing teenagers who are supervised by a person who is at least 4 years older than the teenager, and these provisions penalize any sexual conduct that would occur between those two people. And what the purpose of this measure is to recognize that even though on Monday, let's say, the contractual relationship between the adult and the child may end, that sexual behavior on Tuesday would not be appropriate. But as the statute currently reads, that is what would happen. It would no longer be against the law for the older person to have sexual contact with the child. So this recognizes that that grooming or that imbalanced relationship may continue for a period of time, and it extends the time of the position of authority for 120 days, even after the position of authority has ended. And it also recognizes that teenagers are around a lot of people who are in authority, even though the parents may not have directly requested that authority or sought out that authority. So it indicates that an adult who assumes that position of authority also is responsible under the criminal statute. And I'll leave my comments at that and certainly take any questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Representative Schoen.
I found it. We fixed it.
Oh, okay. Alrighty.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this was Representative Winkler's bill previously. I think we're all fine.
I can't vote yes fast.
Okay, without any questions, Representative Lohmer, any closing comments?
I just appreciate your support, and I will.
I forgot to ask if there's anybody from the public to testify. Seeing none. Go ahead, Representative Lohmer.
Okay, thank you for your support, and I'd like to renew my motion to re-refer Senate File 1137 as amended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're done. Meeting adjourned.